and we'll go directly to the borough assembly. Right meow.
Annie, Bailey, Alvin, Talia, Jackie, Beverly, myself, Lenora, Warren, Paul, Laura, Charlotte, Ernie, Jim, and Blake.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a quorum. Before we get started, I want to welcome on board our new assembly member, Jim Smith, who's also mayor of the city of Sandpoint. So welcome aboard, Jim.
Thanks.
And Daly Shack, she's not here right now. I think she might show up partway through the meeting. So anyway, welcome on board. Hope you enjoy your stay. And so adoption of the agenda. Anybody see anything on the agenda they need? That needs correcting. Okay. Anyone feel like they may have a conflict of interest on any of the items on the agenda? Okay. Who just joined us?
Hi, it's me, Josie.
Okay. Thank you, Josie. So, with that, we're going to turn the meeting over to APCM for their presentation, and that's Blake.
Blake.
Right. So I'll go ahead and turn the floor over to you. There should be a mic right there in front of you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, everyone. My name is Blake Phillips. I'm a director at Alaska Permanent Capital Management. I'm going to be walking through a review of the permanent fund today. We don't have any recommended changes. You recall we made, I think in January of this year, we made to institute some changes, and those have been very helpful, not fully stopping the pain, but those are important, and I'll go over those when we get to them as well. So we've been managing this account since July of 1993. There have been total contributions of $19.4 million, withdrawals of $24.1 million, and as of the end of October, it stood at $42.5 million. As of yesterday, I believe, it was at $43.7 million. So we have seen some nice recovery here towards the in the last few months. The annualized account return since inception has been 6.2%. And then the overall allocation risk control of 27%. And risk control used to be called more bonds, but we're just kind of framing how we talk about it. That's kind of the role that it plays within the portfolio. Risk assets at 52%, primarily equities. And that's where we're, you know, we look to garner the most return in a long-term basis, and then alternatives, which can play some various factors within the portfolio. If we move forward a couple of slides, so I'm on slide four now. Really, the story of this year and how next year plays out is the same. It's been all about inflation and interest rates. The central banks have been extremely trying to get inflation under control across the globe, really. And the main tool with which to do that is raising interest rates. And so we've seen some pretty historic moves. You know, yields have moved up almost 4% since the beginning of the year. They're not done yet in the U.S. There's still a little more room to go. And, you know, the two things that really the central banks focus on is controlling inflation and then economic growth. And they've made it extremely clear that they are prioritizing inflation over economic growth right now, and they're just fine to put us into a recession if that's what it takes. The positive silver lining of that situation is that in the U.S., we're getting close to that, I think, where they're going to be able to pull off the gas on these interest rate increases. You recall we had the last four increases were 0.75%, which is pretty big, especially to have multiple of them. And so the positive thing is that we have seen inflation start to roll over, and so probably peak. We do obviously have some kind of geopolitical events that are going to have kind of extended some of that inflation. You know, with, like, if you look over in Europe, natural gas prices have been up something like 300%. And so that's going to be a real damper on the ability for Europe to have any kind of economic growth probably until that situation is resolved. There's also some stuff going on over in China where they have been, you know, they've still just now starting to kind of ease on their COVID protocols. And so that just started about a week ago, but that's also slowed trade and economic growth over there. There's a fun element. Hopefully they don't invade Taiwan, because that would be not good. But that being said, all of these negatives that we've been experiencing all year, inflation, increasing interest rates, and increasing interest rates is, makes it more difficult for companies to borrow money, for capital expenditures, et cetera. And so when there's uncertainty about where those interest rates are going to be at, it makes people a little more reticent to go out and invest because they don't necessarily know what their cost of capital is. So we have inflation showing signs of easing. We have interest rate increases probably getting close to being done. And the yield curve that forecasts what interest rates are going to do over time is already showing a potential cut by the end of next year. And that's going to be really positive. So, I mean, one of the probably most painful parts this year was actually not so much the stock market. It was the fact that we saw bonds fall in at the same time, because what happened is we're coming off zero-bound interest rates. So when they shifted from, and you have no, you know, very little low income, when the interest rates go up, the bond prices will fall because you can replace that bond at a higher interest rate. So you're going to pay less for the existing. And since there was no, you know, income to be cross-affecting that, it really just caused a pretty historic downshift in the bond market. Good point of that is now we've had this, the yield curves are much higher. You know, yields on standard bond indexes are up at like 4.5% now. So even if we have a little more adjustment on those interest rates, there's going to be a lot of income that's going to, you know, we wouldn't expect to see any kind of down 10%+ movement in the bond market next year. It should act more as that stabilizer within the portfolio. And if, for example, if rates are cut by 1% out in the future, that is the bond piece of portfolio will increase 10%. So it's much more back to like going to be a, more of a stabilizer when we do have times of turbulence. Moving to page 5. So we do think this, the bear market's very advanced. We may have hit the trough already. We've had some pretty strong recovery in the last few months as the kind of signs of inflation easing a bit, interest rates. The other positive thing is if there is a resolution in Ukraine, that's going to open, you know, that'll free up a lot of kind of things that are causing trade problems as well. You can see here that this was like about probably as of a month or so ago, but stocks were down 24%, bonds were down 15%, and then you have alt beta, which is something that we've added to the portfolio most recently, and it was pretty much the only overweight allocation that we have, and that was only down 7% at this time. So you can see that over 10% of the portfolio was moved into that, and so while it, down 7% doesn't feel good, it feels a lot better than down 24 or down 15. So it added, making, you know, having these meetings where we, you know, we're not necessarily going to change the portfolio at every one of these, but being diligent about going in, looking at it, seeing if there's other things that we can do to add does pay off over the long term, making these incremental changes. So that has been a big positive. The other positive piece of news is, whereas coming into this year, valuations were well above their long-term historical averages, that can be justified by where interest rates were at on a very low level. Now with interest rates increasing, we've had valuations come in, and they're actually sitting right around long-term historical averages. So that's not a headwind for stock market growth from a valuation standpoint. And then also kind of goes back to the same, all these bad things that we've been experiencing. One of those is consumer sentiment. When you get consumer sentiment this bad, mainly caused by inflation, the return after that troughs is 25%. So there's a lot of kind of silver linings here that we're could see as we go into the next year. So the main takeaways are we're seeing inflation pressures ease. You know, stocks have already rebounded a decent amount off their September lows, and the Fed has started signaling that they're ready to slow down on the interest rate increases and potentially be kind of ending that rate hike cycle. We've been very focused on risk this year. You might recall last year, we had everything. We were the opposite side of the boat. It was, we were overweight stocks. There was all the Fed money coming in, had a very strong year. This year we expected more volatility coming in, pulled way back, went to much more defensive positioning, and that has helped the portfolio overall. Before I get into the actual portfolio, can I answer any market questions or anything that anyone might be curious about?
One quick question.
Yeah.
I can't refresh our memory. It's called Alt-Beta. Is that just an arbitrary name, or does that actually mean something?
No, so it's alternative beta. Yeah, I know. It sounds very financy of us. But it is kind of a set of tools that are kind of more complex strategies that oftentimes, you know, hedge funds or investment banks utilize. And over the last several years, there has been, so previously it was not easy to access, very high fees, very illiquid. They've since made tools that we can trade with, like an exchange-traded fund. They do have some of them that are made for more return enhancement. And then the reason that we use it is for dampening the volatility in the portfolio. And it has done exactly that. It has acted better than bonds and stocks this year. And so there's a bunch of different, I don't want to get too down the rabbit hole on what it is. You know, one of them we have is like a buy right strategy where, you know, they're buying the S&P 500 and then they're selling options around it. So you're not going to get all the upside that you would with stocks because you're going to have it protected on the downside, but that costs money. And then you sell calls on the upside, which pays for that protection that you buy. But it, so that's one way of dampening volatility. Some of the other ones that are trading rates and other kind of interest rate arbitrage, but it's all intended to you know, really dampen the risk of the portfolio, and that's how we use it.
Others? Okay.
Right. Moving into the portfolio, this is the portfolio's growth over time. So that Blue Mountain chart, that's comprehensive of all contributions, withdrawals, and market returns. And those little bars you see down at the bottom there, those are full individual portfolio returns for the year. So mostly what we want to see. But as you can see, there are some of those down years, and that's, you know, we expect that to happen over time. You know, where we're targeting around, you know, 6-7% portfolio over 10 years, 6% return, pretty much never going to get 6-7% in any given year. It's going to be a combination of, you know, like we had last year, up 15%, and then you're going to have some of the tough years like we're experiencing now where we're, you know, down around 10%. Turning to page 9. So this is the asset allocation as it sits now. And so if you recall, the way our investment process works is all of the asset classes that you can see on the left side there are all the asset classes that we want to have exposure in the portfolio to. And they're all made up of exchange-traded funds or mutual funds for the most part. And we try to get access to these asset classes with the both the most accurate to good exposure to that asset class, but also being very conscious of what those things cost to do that. And so, you know, I think the portfolio cost, and this is cost that is outside of us, these are that are paid to the investment vehicle providers, is probably about 0.15% now. And that, for comparison, you mutual funds are usually 0.75, 1% plus. And so, you know, one of the main tenets of our philosophy, too, is you can't control returns, but you can control expenses. And so that's something that we're always paying very close attention to. So the strategic weight is meant to accomplish the permanent fund goals, and that's what we kind of review each year. We made changes earlier this January. We're not making any suggestions at this time. You can see the risk control or the kind of bond piece of the portfolio, which is a little bit overweight now. That's part of our defensive posturing. You can see risk assets are underweight, not massively, but down 2%, where I think we're over 4 or 5% above that going through 2021. And then where we really have used, probably made the biggest kind of discretionary changes, because we do have the ability to utilize these ranges you can see down on the right side. So that does put in guardrails for what we can do. but we do have the discretion to move those things around. So you can see that alternative beta is pretty much the only primary cash and alternative beta are the two primary things that we've overweighted this year. And that, again, is kind of due to defensive posturing. So it, as we get into next year and clear things up, you'll probably see this shift more towards neutral. And once we get, like, as we continue to get news, maybe even kind of get back to where we could feel better about a more offensive posturing or removing, you know, alternate beta is something that we're using right now with volatility heightened. That might be something that we could take out of the portfolio if we don't think it has a need to place for it to play a role in the future. Page 10. So the orange bar is the strategic benchmark. So that would be that that range in a vacuum. If the portfolio stayed exactly at that, that is what would happen if we were exactly on the benchmark. And so the reason we give you that is because if we are far off of that, like either up or down, we're doing something that's deviating from the investment strategy that we told you. And so that's why we view that as a good benchmark. It's made a pro rata share of each of those asset classes. You can see this year down 12.6% versus 12.9% at the end of October. As of November 25th, down 9.2%. So, and it was probably down over 15% sometime in September. So it's had some nice recovery. On the far left, since inception, you can see 6.2% versus 6% strategic benchmark. Over the long term, that's exactly where we want to be. You know, we want to be making some incremental return if we can. With the strategic benchmark, we always want to make sure that we're pretty close to that. So that is really key. And then all the rest of those periods are just different kind of periods that you can see how things – and you can see last year we had a up 14.8 versus 14.4. That was us being overweight stocks versus the benchmark, and that explains most of that outperformance. And then finally, this is something new that we've added in is this little bell curve down here. And so we're always – and that's when we do this with these modeling simulations, we run 5,000 simulations – and especially in these turbulent times, we're paying attention to these risk models to make sure we're not seeing something that is way out on the tail end of those curves, because that would mean that something that we have built into our model is not working correctly and those assumptions are off and that we may need to make adjustments. We didn't see that last year with the strong year, and we're, you know, it has pushed down towards that end of where we like to see it, but still within expectations. That, I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Okay. Questions?
Quick one on the last graph you pointed.
Yeah.
What does a circle mean?
That was calendar year 2021's return, and this is a year-to-date return for this year. And it's just showing
actual.
Yes.
The circle is the actual.
Yes, and then it gives you an idea of where it, like how far away it is. You know, the majority of returns are going to be on that top end of the curve or in the middle there where the most outcomes are at. And you can see that this year is kind of is much down towards like kind of the low end of where you would expect it to be things to be with this portfolio, but still within expectations.
And then in the workshop, we were talking about how do you get paid from us under contract? And is that a long-term arrangement or change from time to time? I don't remember. Other people remember, I'm sure, but I don't.
It's
reach an agreement with you on all
it's that. I just looked at your contract before I came in, and it's very attractive. I can. It's 0.25% up to $10 million, and then 0.15% up to $100 million. So you're probably right around 0.16% is the fee that we are paid as your investment advisor.
That's your annual fee.
Correct. And it's charged monthly based off average balance in the portfolio.
And refresh our memory on how long into the future are we obligated? I think we're all happy with you, but just
30 days.
But that's all, 30?
Yep. We don't lock them. Don't believe in forcing you to use us as your advisor if there's something that you feel we're not doing correctly.
Better than 4 hours, I guess. Yeah.
Well, so long. It's been a really long 30 days.
Yeah.
Other questions? Now is the time. So hopefully we will continue to watch this thing correct itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic about next year. It is going to be very dependent on how inflation kind of trends, because that's driving a lot of decisions, both central bank, economics, all of those things. You know, there's a lot of speculation that we're going to have a recession next year. The thing that's counter that is we're at historic lows on unemployment. You know, it's at 3.5%. And so it's hard to say you're going into a recession when the labor market's as strong as it is. That being said, we have had a couple quarters of negative GDP growth this year. And so, again, that, you know, inflation and higher interest rates are both things that are showing that they're slowing the economy. How bad that growth or how much that slows is going to be pretty dependent on where that inflation goes.
Weird question, others can't find people for jobs.
Oh, well, I know.
Where are those people hiding?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
The last person I hired, it took me like 6 months.
Right, yeah. Everything's that way, even hamburgers.
Yeah. Not enough snowmakers at Alyeska, all sorts of horrible things.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, where can people go?
I don't know.
Were in jobs since they were 30. They're 60 now. They're taking early retirement because they don't want to live through COVID again or something. And they know they won't make it or something like that. Very tiring. That's where all those jobs are. They're not coming back. They're cutting and running.
That's depressing.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And the people, we can't seem to find people trained in some of the jobs that we need, too. So that's just getting tough.
Yeah. Lots of train jobs that are like pilot shortage and things like that, where it's not flip a switch.
This morning I seen on the news that the interest rates for mortgage rates are coming back down again.
Yeah. And that is going to be tricky, because the reason mortgage rates got so low is because the government was in there buying bonds. And so now we're switched to, we've never seen this in history before. We've never seen the balance sheets of these central banks get so big. But that supported keeping rates down. Now they're switching to where they're trying to wind that down. And so that's why you saw those mortgage rates increase so quickly, because you had a huge buyer in the market step away. And so then you had everybody else, or, you know, whether it's investment houses or whatever, they were like, well, we want to get paid more for that. And that's why you just saw a really abrupt shift. And I think mortgage rates went from like 3 to 7 in 6 months. I mean, very crazy. But that's another area where we're starting to see inflation easing off. You're seeing house prices start to roll over in pretty short order, and that's a big part of the economy in itself.
So were you going to say anything about the other section?
Oh, no, I just kind of put – there's a lot of just extra stuff in the appendix that we just try to add additional information for you. This, for example, the asset class returns, so you can get an idea of all of those different asset classes that the portfolio has exposure to and how they have acted over different time periods. Nothing that was necessarily going to speak to. And then what you see after that is the portfolio appraisal. That is what our monthly statements that we report look like. And so you get there's always reporting showing kind of some various values, yields, et cetera, and that comes out to you monthly.
Actual names on all data, so that was actual names there, so that's good, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can look them up. I could warn you that they sound even worse than the name when you read what they're composed of.
Who the heck that is?
Yeah.
Values stayed close to the same,
but the loss. No, so the way those are all different time periods. So when you see periods that are over 1 year, like the 3 year, that'll be the annualized rate. So the average rate for the last 3 years is, so like the since inception, if you take all the, which is 6.2%, that means that all of the returns cumulatively added up to a 6.2% annual return since it was begun in 1993.
Any other comment? If not, thank you very much.
You're welcome. If anything else comes up, please let me know. All right.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we know where the money went. So before us, we have two sets of minutes, so we need a motion for... Oh, we didn't? That's what happens when you go to these meetings. Okay, so we need a motion to adopt the agenda.
Make a motion, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
A second, this is Josie.
Thank you, Josie. So, if there's no objections, the agenda will stand as written. Okay, now we're down to minutes. So, we need a motion to approve the November 10th regular meeting minutes.
This is Chris. I make a motion that we approve the minutes from our last meeting.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Warren.
Thank you, Warren. Any discussion on the minutes? Changes? Hearing none. If there's no objections, I'll let the minutes stand as written. We need a motion for the November 21st special meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion. This is Josie.
Thank you, Josie.
Second, Warren.
Second by Warren. If there's no objections or changes, I will consider November 21st minutes approved. Next item on the agenda is financial report. Annie?
Doing a motion.
Oh, why can't I do a motion, Warren? Second?
All second is Chris.
Thank you, Chris. So apparently you can see I haven't learned very much at the AML meeting the last couple of days. Annie, you want to go through this?
All right, Mayor Ostrakan Assembly, in the packet is the October 2022 financials. This is 4 months into the fiscal year. I'll point out two things on page one of the general fund. One is the raw fish tax, which for October we received $362,000. This is about 75% over the five-year average, so it's less than what we've gotten over the last 5 years. That being said, overall, for the year-to-date amount, we are at $2.39 million, which is 114% over the five-year average. So we are still ahead of where we've been the last 5 years, which is good news. The other item is the state shared raw fish tax, which is R01265. We had estimated in May when the FY23 budget was approved that we would receive $1.5 million in raw fish tax. And that actually came in October at $2.24 million, which far exceeded our expectations, which is great news. So with that, I have no other comments, but if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Annie? Hearing none. Call the question on the motion.
Paul?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Bailey? Chris?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And in your package, you have the investment report, and as Hanny said in the workshop, one change, and it is, there's been an increase in the portfolio, so it went to $43,705,000. But that's there for you to look at. So before us, we need a motion and a second to accept the consent agenda.
Make a motion, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
I'll second it, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Annie, you want to walk us through?
Yeah, so there's the first two agenda items I'll discuss together. The first one's Resolution 2327, adopting an alternative allocation method for the FY23 Shared Fisheries Business Tax Program and certifying that this allocation method fairly represents the distribution of significant effects of fishery business activity in FMA2, the Aleutian Islands area. And Resolution 2328 adopts the same thing and certifies the same thing, but this is for FMA 3, which is the Alaska Peninsula area. So on these, the state of Alaska levies taxes on fishery resources processed or exported from Alaska. The state allocates a share of state fish tax collected outside the municipal boundaries with the communities affected by the fishing industry activities. And this is actually based on 2021, not 2020, fishery activities. The municipalities in the borough's fishery management area agreed to an alternative method for allocation since the inception of the program, and below are the resolutions adopting the same alternative method for FY22. Resolution 2327 adopts an alternative allocation method for FY23 shared fisheries business tax, and this is for the FMA2 Aleutian Island areas, which is all of the municipalities within FMA2 west of Unimac, receiving an equal share of 60% of the program receipts. The eligible cities will share the remaining 40% of the funding allocation on a per capita basis. The FY23 total allocation to the borough should be $190,758.25. Resolution 2328 is in regards to FMA3, which is the Alaska Peninsula area, and all the municipalities within FMA3 are east of Unimac. Will share equally 40%. The remaining 60% will be divided among the eligible cities based on a per capita basis. The FY23 total allocation to the borough should be $9,700.06. So in the packet, there's further information with a spreadsheet showing the allocations for the borough and the other communities. So on those two, if there's any questions, let me know.
In the workshop, you mentioned that maybe or maybe not there be any changes if some of the processing moves in our region. But you know, by next meeting, maybe if you see anything that's would point to something that we should be aware of, you could let us know if we're going to change the amount.
Yes, we will look into that.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Others? Okay.
All right, and then Resolution 2329 is a surplus relating to disposal of surplus, obsolete, or unneeded supplies. Currently, we have a desire to dispose of a Honda ATV located in Actan. This was used for the helicopter transportation. It is in a state of disrepair, and we would like to surplus this. This will go out to bid later this week if approved. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Questions? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Josie?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So we don't have anything under public hearings at this time, but we do have an ordinance. So we need a motion to bring to the floor and schedule Ordinance 2301, amending the operating and capital budget for FY23.
I make a motion we bring Ordinance 2301 to the table for discussion. Chris.
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you. So made by Chris, second by Warren. Annie?
Yes, so 2301 is amending the operating capital budget for FY23. On May 26, 2022, the Borough Assembly passed Ordinance 2211, adopting the operating and capital budget for FY23. Now that we are partway through the fiscal year, revisions to the budget have been identified. The FY23 proposed budget revisions are outlined as follows, and they're also in a spreadsheet in your packet, but essentially we would like to increase the state shared fish raw tax revenue from $1,500,000 to the approximately $2.24 million. This reflects what we have received from the state of Alaska in October 2022 for the FY22 fish business shared tax and the FY22 fish landing shared tax. So that would be an increase in our revenues. As far as expenditures go, we would like to add a rental lease item to the finance department in the amount of $6,000. To cover the lease expenses for the office space for leasing and at the old King Cove School. The monthly lease rate is $750 per month, and we need to account for that in our budget. The next change would be to increase the travel and per diem line item in the communications department from $6,000 to $10,000. The communications director did travel to all the communities this year, and the cost exceeded what was expected, largely in part to travel delays and things of that nature that were outside of our control. And then one more for Fund 20, or for the general fund, which is the other department for the insurance line item. We'd like to increase the insurance line item from $228,000 to $250,000, which is in part because the FY23 insurance costs were more than anticipated. And then there's two additional changes. One's to Fund 24 bond construction under the contract labor line item. We would like to add $42,000 to this line item. The borough bonds and permanent fund monies are managed by APCM, as was discussed during the earlier presentation. The borough does pay them a fee to manage our funds, which is approximately $7,000 per month, and this varies depending on the state of our finances. But it's approximately $84,000. These fees are currently divided between Fund 24 and Fund 40, which is the permanent fund. These expenses have not been included in the budget in the past, but should be. Therefore, we would like to add $42,000 to line item E24900000380, and another $42,000 to the permanent fund line item 40900000380. And then this should accurately reflect where we are expending those items. So based off the above, the expected FY23 revenues have changed to $7,509,000. The expected FY23 expenditures for funds 01, 24, 30, 40, and 41 are now $7,113,000, with a net revenue over expenditures of $396,000. There's a transfer out to the helicopter operation of $749,000, a transfer in from the terminal operation of $28,500, and a transfer in from the permanent fund of $952,000, which we will not be adjusting until the end of the fiscal year. Therefore, there's an expected FY23 surplus of $628,000. However, the transfer in from the permanent fund will need to be adjusted at the end of the year. So based off these numbers, it looks currently like we would have a deficit of $324,000, and then we'll adjust the permanent fund accordingly so we have a balanced budget. So on the spreadsheet, if you look, all the increases are shown in green. Decreases are shown in red, which there are none at this time. And with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions for Annie? Paul?
Any schedule of amending the budget for December? I guess the second reading will be January. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit early. I can't remember.
It's about on track with what we've done in the past. Okay. So it's usually 6 months in.
And then in the workshop, you mentioned this increase of $744,000 in fishery tax. You may have some additional information on why it jumped up pretty good at the next meeting. Be useful to see what that got to.
yeah, we can try to figure that out. I'm not sure what calculation the state uses, but we can try to figure that out.
And then finally, the last question is, it seemed like we amend the budget in May sometime, too. We'll still do that, a final amendment.
It just really depends. I think we'll just go to June and finalize it at that point, because we'll have all the costs, and then we can finalize the budget at that point in time.
Other questions? Okay. Question on the motion?
Paul?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. Before us, we have two resolutions. So resolution 2326 relating to the acquisition of real property authorizing a lease between the city of King Cove and the Aleutians Eastboro for room 107 at the old King Cove City School. We need a motion and a second.
Chris, I make a motion.
This is Josie.
Thank you. Thank you, Josie. Annie?
Yes, so Marispec just read the title, so I won't reread it, but resolution 2326 is regarding the lease for the Old King Cove School. The borough does have the right and powers to acquire, hold, dispose of, or manage real property both inside and outside the borough, and this can be done via a lease. Due to the condition of the King Cove Borough Office, administration did advertise for lease space in King Cove and received two responses, which were looked at. It was determined that the office space at the Old King Cove School best met the borough needs. Administration characterized it as an emergency to move the finance office and entered into a lease with the City of King Cove for room 107 at the Old King Cove School, which became effective November 15, 2022. Typically, the borough would need to approve this via ordinance, but since this is a government-to-government lease, this can be approved via resolution. Therefore, administration is requesting that the Assembly approve Resolution 2226, authorizing the mayor to negotiate or to enter into a lease for room 107 at the Old King Cove School. Please note that the rent is $750 per month, and that includes all utilities except phone service and internet, and administration recommends approval. Thank you.
Questions for Annie? Paul?
In the workshop, people were talking about different options in the future after this one-year period, I guess, And one thing we didn't mention in the workshop was perhaps, maybe we did mention a little bit, but perhaps just a permanent move if that space that we're going to be getting is suitable. It might be cost effective to make it more of a permanent fixture. Anyway, that's just an option for the future that...
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it. You talked about modular buildings and talked about rebuilding the one we got material out there. But I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you.
Yep. No, that'll be part of – we'll put all the options in there for the Assembly to look at. Any other comment? Question on the motion?
Warren?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So, Resolution 2330, Resolution 2330 authorizing the mayor to negotiate and execute a contract with Dell to provide project management, design, and construction services for the Cold Bay Clinic renovation project in the amount not to exceed $334,680. We need a motion and a second.
Make a motion, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
Second, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. The reason I'm reading these is I don't get the cost.
All right. So the borough has applied for and successfully received $2 million in HRSA grant funding for the Cold Bay Clinic renovation project. These are Congress-delegated funds. This project entails a major renovation to the existing health clinic and are include but may not be limited to installation of operable walls, the electrical generator boiler replacement, indoor air quality upgrades, a morgue purchase and installation, the contamination shower eye wash purchase, the dental chairs, etc. In order to complete this work, the borough needs to engage an engineering project management firm to assist with the architectural and engineering aspects of this project. Administration has requested a proposal from Dow to provide these services. The borough has discussed this project with Dow, who has been selected to provide the borough with professional project management and construction management services, and Dow has also visited and is familiar with the clinic. Dow has proposed the deliverables, which includes a 35% schematic design, 65% to 95 to 100% design with permitting, bid and construction contract execution, and construction administration and closeout services. Administration has reviewed the proposal and scope of work, and it is in the amount of $334,680. Administration recommends that, but please keep in mind that we will be having discussions to see if that price can come down. So with that, administration recommends approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions for Annie? Okay.
Oh, Paul? There's a motion on the floor. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just a quick comment. I'm a little uncomfortable at some of the aspects of this. Everybody, I think, on the assembly has been supportive of the clinic and the work down there, as we're pointing out in the workshop, but I'm not going to vote in favor of this motion at this time because the main reason is it's a big amount, a pretty big amount of money for not going to bid. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, I'll just make a quick comment. We were on a roll a few years ago about building that new clinic in Cold Bay. That didn't pan out at all after we ran into a big snake there, and it didn't go through. And I think that we still have the money left over for this type of renovation. And with the clinic in Cold Bay, where it's located now, and it's right on the airport, in a good location. The reason we really wanted to get out of that location was because of the building that was next to it was flying apart. So if we were able to get a few more years out of this building and maybe down the road we could help them again if they need a new facility. But we got to help them out here because I guess we're the designated funding source for them right at the moment. So I'll be voting.
Thank you, Warren. And Annie, for clarification, does any of this come out of the general fund?
As of right now, no.
Okay.
If it does, it'll come back to the assembly.
All right. Other comments?
Chris here.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I kind of ditto what Warren said. You know, it would have been nice to build a new clinic there, but we knew it. Some of the things that happened with trying to do that, and it's a pretty good sound structure that they have over there right now, and with that other building removed, it's in a very good location for medevacs, and it is the hub clinic for our community, for all of our communities, and so I certainly support what we're trying to do with helping Cold Bay get a better and more modernized clinic, so I'll be voting yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Other comments? Paul?
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm not opposing the money that Annie spent a lot of work on. For the clinic, it's that $338,000 for the consultant. That's all we're approving at this meeting, I believe, by this resolution. I just want to clarify that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other comments? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Josie?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Paul?
No.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. So we do not have any business before us. New business, we have two items, and I will turn it over to Annie.
Yes, Mayor Osberg, Assembly. The first one is a funding overview of all the COVID-19 monies that we received. At the November Assembly meeting, I was requested to put some information together. So I'm not going to go this in the great detail like I did at the workshop, but essentially the borough to date has or will receive a total of $6,690,000 in funding from four sources. The first one is the CARES Act funds, which we received about $3.7 million. All those monies have been expended in full on a numerous items, from CARES Act, like economic stimulus program, food distribution, air purification systems in the school, et cetera. Another one is the State of Alaska Corona State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, which replaced lost fisheries business tax. That was in the amount of $279,000. That was used for borough revenue replacement and specifically applied to the maintenance on borough-owned schools and the Cold Bay Terminal renovation. So those have been expended in full as well. The ARPA funds, we received $648,173. At the July 14th meeting, the Assembly approved Resolution 2303, which approved allocating the monies for King Cove School pipe corrosion, King Cove School water corrosivity issues, Sandpoint School pool repairs, and Cold Bay Terminal chair purchases, which fell under the allotted uses for those monies. And then the last one is the Local Assistance and Tribal Consistency Fund, which we have just recently received half of that money, so about $1,014,000, and we anticipate receiving the other half during the first part of 2023. At the last meeting, a resolution was approved that gave general consensus on using the monies for maintenance projects, grant management requirements, like to meet grant management requirements or pay for a portion of the second 10% owed to the Army Corps of Engineers for the Actan Harbor project. The Assembly will approve uses of the funds before any of that money is expended, so that will come back before the Assembly for those types of issues. So with that, I hope I answered the questions that were asked in November, and if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions? Paul?
Yeah. Thank you, Annie, for that breaking down the money. But one thing I didn't see, you had the school air filtration systems, but we did some work on this building. Is that reflected?
That's on here, too. That was expended with the CARES Act monies, and I think, I don't know where it is, but it's on here. We spent it with the CARES Act monies.
Other comments or questions? Okay. Item two.
The next item is quarter three, Aleutians Eastboro Strategic Plan update. In the packet is the third quarter, which was September 1st through November 30th. Outlining the work that has been done on the strategic plan. The vision navigation chart that's in here does reflect all the work. I'm very, very proud of all the staff for all the work they've done in this. We've met basically all our quarter three goals, moved a few things around just because of timing. But if there's any specific questions, please let me know. So I'm not going to go into it any further. But thank you.
Questions for Annie? Okay, thank you. And so we're going to move down to reports and updates. So just keep going, Annie.
Okay. All right, so my report is in the packet. The first one is just the Sandpoint Harbor Float Project update. We did receive the $5.365 million Port Infrastructure Development Program funds. That's ran through MARAD. We have received the welcome board letter, and this week had our first kickoff meeting, which was more of an overview of the expectations from the grant, which require us to possibly do a National Environmental Policy Act, which is the NEPA and or environmental assessment to Section 106 SHPO requirements and stuff. So we're working with Moffitt and Nickel right now to go through that and see if we can maybe not do a full-blown NEPA just because it will delay the project from either 5 months to 12 months, depending if we have to do that, and it's a huge expense. So we're working with them on getting through that. So the estimated just to get the grant is 6 to 24 months, depending on how long it takes us to get through this process. So we're hoping for 5 months rather than 24 months. But the other grant we received was for the State of Alaska Harbor Municipal Grant. We received $4.125 million for that. We're also working with the State of Alaska because their requirements, of course, differ from the federal government requirements. They wanted us to have an agreement done in February and have the work done 18 months later. And according to MARAD, I can't spend a single dollar of federal or non-federal monies until I have a grant agreement with them. So we're working with the state to figure out the logistics, if you will. So more to come on that project. The Acatan Essential Air Service, as you know, two proposals were submitted. One was from Grant Aviation and Maritime Helicopters for a joint proposal with fixed-wing service between Dutch Harbor and Accoon and helicopter service between Accoon and Acatan. The other one was with Raven Connect, and that would have just been fixed-wing service between Dutch Harbor and Accoon, and it did not include a helicopter link. So after speaking with the City of Acatan and others, we have opted to fully support the grant maritime option because that helps subsidize the helicopter portion for us. So rather than paying 100% of that, we will only be required to pay 50%. Our current agreement for the helicopter does expire in March 31st of 2023, so I'll have a new helicopter service agreement before you once we find out who the Essential Air Service awards the contract to. But we really want maritime and grant to be selected. Otherwise, the helicopter operations will shift back to the borough. And that's a huge undertaking. And I don't think we want that back. Right, Charlotte?
Nope. Never did.
King Cove Road update. After many months, the Ninth Circuit of Appeals has set an in-bank hearing on the case. The hearing has been scheduled for December 13th, 2022 at 1:30 in Pasadena, California. So also on the 28th of November, an attorney from Sea Lion Corporation in the Native Village of Hooper Bay Tribal Council informed us that it intended to file an amici brief on the side of the opponents, plaintiffs, and appellees. The brief has been filed. Our attorneys are looking at that, and I don't really have much more to comment on that at that time or at this time. But for this meeting this hearing in Pasadena, each side, the Department of Interior and Department of Justice and the State of Alaska, and which includes us, will have half an hour to argument their side. And then the other side gets a half an hour as well. So Mayor Osterbach, Warren,
sorry.
Will, goodness, is that me?
It's you.
My watch. And Warren will be attending, but it's in a panel of 11 active judges chosen randomly. I think the majority of them were appointed by Trump, and then the others are Democratic judges. So we'll have more information. That's happening next week. So, and then other than that, we have also entered into some agreements for maintenance. I'm just going to talk about the Cold Bay Terminal. One of the cargo bay doors is in a state of disrepair, so we've had to hire Door Systems of Alaska to go out there and fix that at a tune of $8,254. So we hope to get that fixed, and that will be paid for out of the Cold Bay Terminal maintenance line item. And then other than that, it's just a lot of day-to-day operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions for Annie? Paul?
Two quick things on the Hitterford terminal route there. I guess it was because the door was broken, but the entrance door to the east where you somebody walked through that door, it would never close. I was kind of doormat. I'd close it about 100 times because I was bored waiting for the plane. But there was a lot of heat leaving my building. And so it's winter time coming. And then in the King Cove Road update, you mentioned some people said local people would be at, I didn't understand that comment you put. Are there people going?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, from where?
Well, Warren's going for the city of King Cove.
Yes.
I'm going for the Aleutians Eastboro. And Della Trumbull is going for the tribe.
King Cove Corporation.
King Cove Corporation. And then Oeto is supposed to go, but for some reason she couldn't. And then Gary?
Gary Hennings. Yeah. My wife's going for the tribe.
Oh, okay.
King Cove Group, Paul. Yeah, we're all grouped together again. I'm like down at AML.
Some of us are in a different room. Anyway, so that's, so that's going to be a long flight down and back.
If I will, Mark Hickey did provide a summary in here. It was asked for at the last assembly meeting. I'm not going to go through this, but it goes over the general election results, AMHS, the ferry system, fiscal status, forward funding for education, et cetera. So that was asked or requested for in November, and he provided me one. So that's in there for your reading pleasure.
And I think yesterday during the meetings at AML, Bryce mentioned organization, and he didn't think the House would be organized for a while. Paul?
I just haven't talked to somebody that may know something. They're waiting for the two results to come
right in,
which should be pretty soon, but maybe today. There was supposed to be some decision, and then announce their organization.
Which would be good if it takes place sooner than later. Okay. Thank you, Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And Talia.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Assembly. My report is in the packet.
I have a little bit more, Mayor. I'd like to start off with the Sandpoints School Deed Capital Improvement Project. Again, we're still waiting on that project agreement from DEED. They're still in CIP review and scoring process. This has been ongoing since the middle of September, and they are postponing sending out project agreements until the review and scoring process is completed. After speaking with CIRC at this point, they anticipate it's going to be sometime next year. They're pretty eager, just as I am, and everyone, to see the whole full aspect of the project agreement, because like I said, we are looking for areas where we can negotiate, just as we anticipated initially about $4 million for this project. We were awarded $2.9 million, requiring $1.9 from the state and about $1 million from the borough with adjustments. So again, I'm going to continue to stay on top of this and keep everyone updated as time progresses. Next is the ISO tank fuel. So on the 17th, the borough was notified that the ISO tank helicopter fuel was running low. We were able to get it on the barge by the 22nd and successfully returned to Accutan by the 26th. Again, big thank you for the collective efforts from Trident and Mattson for the work that they did. And I also had a conversation with Annie, because as Trident exits out, we are going to have to look at new aspects on how to get things transferred from one place to another. Trident is a pretty large moving piece with how things get done. So further discussions, we can anticipate to speak a little bit more about. School maintenance, a lot of things going on once again in the world of maintenance. With the Accutan School, the borough was notified on the 20th of November that the heating system was not distributing properly throughout the whole school. Consequently, the borough did go into an agreement with Long for the repair of the boiler and heater. We're getting a lot of direction and aid from Dow. thus far, Long has inspected and provided quotes for the repair of the boilers in Cold Bay, Sandpoint Borough's office, Sandpoint School, Sandpoint School fourplex, as well as False Bat School. With the Sandpoint pool, the borough went into an agreement with Evolution Pool. The crew arrived on the 24th. Demolition began on the 25th. Due to some unforeseen items and things that did come up, we are waiting on some additional items, things such as plumbing, piping, and an undersized leaking heat exchanger were some things that came up. So right now, the borough is waiting on a quote from Evolution Pool for a heat exchanger, which we anticipate will arrive around mid-December with approval. Next, I have the Sandpoint HVAC control upgrade system. So on the 25th, the borough was notified by the Director of Technology, which is Austin, that their HVAC interface system pretty much died. It's no longer working. The 28th, Long did provide an upgrade proposal for a new DDC HVAC system, which they initially proposed back in 2019, but was rejected at the time, and it was a part of a larger project. So in the future, the borough does aim to have the boilers and HVAC system serviced annually to prevent some of these major issues from coming up. We would like to get that HVAC computer system up and going, but there's a lot of variables that are up in the air right now, primarily which party is responsible for it, as well as the additional repairs or costs that might be associated with this project. Again, it's more discussion has to take place before the borough can kind of decide which direction we move forward to get this repaired. False Pass School, as we know, Long is also doing repairs on the boilers. But in addition to that, they also did notify us that the DDC system that they have, Direct Digital Control System, which was installed back in 1996. I don't think Lenora was alive then, but it is once again outdated. The factory no longer even has the backup for it. So what they have suggested in the beginning of the year is to discuss comprehensive mechanical and scheduled service agreements to encompass all the facilities that we have, and they believe that this will help, and I agree with them, with minimizing some of the bigger issues that come up in the future. Maintenance connection. So I'm continuing to look over MC, which is short for maintenance connection site, processing work orders, assigning labor, closing out the work orders, and making sure that everything is just essentially streamlined through. Process has been going pretty well, working closely with CERC, and they monitor my work and always provide really good feedback. And I always like to wrap up with the regular meetings attended, and that is about it. I think I spoke a lot, so sorry about that, guys.
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
So before I ask for questions, in your minutes, I want you to correct one thing. When you're talking about moving the fuel tank back and forth between
Akatan
and Alaska for filling?
Yes.
Not when Trident leaves. It should read
if
they decide to leave.
Okay, if
okay.
They exit. Thank you,
anybody
Mayor.
Anybody have questions for Talia? Paul?
Yes. Oh, I didn't catch the date. You said the pool in San Juan would be full and heated. I didn't know.
No. No, not yet. There's just a lot of new things constantly pop up and all new turns. So we're trying our best to stay on top of it. But no, it's not heated and it's not ready for us to hop in as of yet.
But is there a date that you have in mind?
No.
That was a September project.
Yes.
You're probably starting to get hate mail pretty soon.
I might.
other questions for Talia or comments? Laura.
Thank you, Mayor Ostrobach and Assembly members. My report is in the Assembly packet for your review. As Annie mentioned earlier, the MBank rehearing with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on the Inco Land Exchange issue is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. on December 13th in Pasadena, California. I've drafted a press release regarding the hearing and our position on this issue. And just sort of for context and background information, last month following the appeals decision to hold an in-bank rehearing decision occurred on November 10th, there was quite a bit of media coverage, and these articles began occurring on the evening of the 10th and the following day, so I was kind of busy dealing with that. The coverage included the Anchorage Daily News, the New York Times, The Hill, Bloomberg Law, and Law 360. Those links are contained in my report. I provided a statement to a couple of publications, which included Law 360, and Della Trumbull, the CEO of the Kinko Corporation, responded to questions from the Anchorage Daily News. I'm also in the process of updating the white paper on the Kinko Access Project, so it contains the latest developments, including court hearings, filings of legal briefs, et cetera. You may recall that back in 2018 was when I initially completed this, but because this is a living document, we want to include the latest developments, so I'm working to update that, and it's a very detailed process, as all the white papers are. And speaking of white papers, I'm continuing research and work on the white paper involving the Akoon Dock and Breakwater project. Right now, I'm kind of looking through and picking out information regarding past helicopter agreements and AS funding information for this report. So it's time intensive, but want to make sure that we have all the information. And just as another update, just wanted to let Borough Administration, Assembly, and staff know that photographer Carrie Tasker, who was out visiting the communities along with myself in July, said he will have our very large photo and video and drone footage collection ready by the end of this week. And I know that there have been some staff members, administration, and some Assembly members that have asked for certain photos, and I've gone to Carrie, and he's provided that piecemeal, but we're very excited to have this very big collection. And just to give you context, when we visited the first five communities, he said he took over 29,000 images, so there was a lot to wade through and edit. But we're excited because it's going to be very helpful for grants, reports, presentations, newsletters, et cetera. Lastly, I'm continuing work on profiling individuals for the newsletter for the Community Alignment Initiative, and we're going to do Kinko teacher Joyce Smith next. I was sort of delayed on that because I was out sick for a bit due to COVID, but going to start getting back to work on that. So those are some of the highlights, and if anyone has any questions or comments, please let me know.
Thank you, Laura. Questions, anyone? Okay. Thank you. Ernie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Assembly, welcome, Jim. My report's in the packet. Appreciate the opportunity to speak about it. North Pacific Fishery Management Council started this week, SSC on Monday, AP on Tuesday. The council actually started today. The big items are, of course, the groundfish specs, and Charlotte may talk about that a little bit. But also, there's a lot of salmon and crab on the agenda. For salmon, the Cook Inlet Salmon FMP amendment, which is dictated by a court ruling, has some effect for us possibly in the future because we're one of the three traditional net fishing areas that are outside of the state waters in the EEZ that we've traditionally been allowed to fish in, and that may be affected afterwards. So we're following that. There's only two alternatives that are viable. The other two, the court has said simply can't be used. Also under salmon, the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force was supposed to have a report, and actually they've transmitted that to the governor, but the governor has not made that public yet, and so the council is not able to look at that information. And there was a Chum Bycatch discussion paper on that, and I actually testified yesterday remotely because of snow, and the first time I've testified remotely to the AP at the request of Trident, just because we take a lot of pollock and we get a lot of and there's a big push to put a big chum bycatch cap on. And so I just the fact that we have fish tax and it helps our communities is what I testified to, and I'll probably testify to the council as well. Also, crab. There are several things on crab because of what's going on with crab, snow crab, and red crab, red king crab in the Bering Sea. Board of Fisheries was last week. It was just about the Bristol Bay finfish, but I went down and listened a little bit, followed along online. There's only six members because David White's resigned. And so the interesting part is whether or not the governor will not appoint somebody new before our meeting. That'll be interesting to know. I was interested that in Bristol Bay, it's mandatory if you're doing home pack of king or coho to put that on your fish ticket. I guess only in Bristol Bay is that mandatory. They postpone action on the Nooshigak King Salmon Management Plan. They put it at the statewide meeting, which is interesting because they wouldn't move the Dungy proposal, the North Peninsula Dungy proposal, to that when our guys asked for it. And they also added one day to the statewide meeting because they moved the management plan to the statewide. I talk about that meeting is held in the Denina Center in this huge first floor hall. Apparently, though, our meeting will be only in half of that hall, and in the other half is going to be a sport boat show. So it might make it fun to come to the meeting and then go to the next door to the boat show. If you are planning to come to the meeting, there's a little box with a little link that you can get a fairly cheap room at Captain Cook. Captain Cook's a good place to stay because that's where the board members stay, and you can pal with them. This information is out in the public, so it's time to book. Otherwise, those rooms will be gone. At the next meeting, we'll probably bring some recommendations whether or not we want to do borough comments. And if you move to the second page, I did put some pretty low-hanging fruit about the proposals that we will certainly oppose. You can tell just by reading the titles of those proposals and who the proposals are, but we'll come with a more specific, you know, we support this or not. But basically, we are going to, in my mind anyway, we're going to oppose these ones that are there. And then fishermen's meetings, we will have another fisherman meeting that we always have every year with agency staff and department staff, what's coming up, what's enforcement going to do, what observer stuff, a bunch of Charlotte's projects will be talked about. That's on December 20th at 10 a.m., and there's a link to the Zoom there, and it'll have to go out in Fish News pretty soon. And by the way, thank you to Laura. She provided me a bunch of those pictures yesterday that I used in my presentation to the AP. And then we had a good meeting, I thought, in Seattle the last month for fishermen. And down below, Alaska fishing communities, I wanted to mention that we signed on to a letter with Alaska fishing communities supporting Murkowski's working waterfronts legislation. I just wanted to put that in there. Otherwise, I'm here to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Ernie. Questions? Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Starlin.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. So I will just dive right in and talk about projects. So to start with electronic monitoring and pollock trawl fleet. So we're currently wrapping up our data review from the bee season for pollock, and I'm preparing an annual report for the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council that we do every year. And we will also be having another Trawl EM committee meeting, which I'm a committee member. That'll meet January 20th, so I'll be giving a full overview of 2022 project at that time. And then I'll also be trying to facilitate a pre-season fleet meeting sometime in the next 2 months. I don't know. We'll see if I can pull that off. mostly to talk about how we move forward with the regulated program since it did pass the council this year. So on that note, actually just this morning at the council in B Reports, we found out that, well, I already knew this, but NIMS presented to the council that there is going to be a delay in the reg writing for this program. So while it's still slated for regulation, it's going to get pushed to 2025, which is unfortunate because we were hoping it would be done by 2023. But I have been assured that headquarters is going to find gap funding so that the fleet doesn't have to go back to not using EM and taking observers, and that hopefully it won't fall on us to do another grant, which I would love to not do. And I think most of the work will be taken off of my shoulders, and NIMS staff will be taking that over to start kind of running that program as if it would be regulated. And kind of on that note, I just got a preliminary, I mean, it's a kind of unofficial, but I got the award notice this morning that we did receive our final year funding from NIFWIF, so that's $474,000 for 2023. I promise I will send that to Jackie as soon as I get it. So, yeah, that's great. We expected that to happen. Oh, and also NOAA headquarters is doing a story about EM and data modernization, and, of course, the Western Gulf is a poster child, so they interviewed a few of our fishermen, and that article will be coming out soon. So always nice to, you know, get a little spotlight.
Can I excuse from the meeting, please? I got to go get my wife from the airport.
Sure.
Not be voting anything?
No more.
Okay, thank you very much.
You just don't want to hear me talk, Warren.
Oh, no, not at all. So you're doing a lot of work there. I'm impressed.
You drive
safe. Thank you
very much. okay, so sorry about that. So that pretty much wraps up Charlie M. So fixed gear EM, we have finally got a draft of the sampling protocols that we've been working with NIMS on. For the fixed gear boats, and now that everything's going on with crab, we real quick had to figure out kind of a draft sampling design for crab and how to sample crab with EM, which was kind of a new thing, but I think we've got that figured out. So depending on what happens with cod this next year, we'll try to pilot that either in the cod fishery or the black cod fishery after that. So mariculture, we do have a local partner in Sandpoint who is going to be subcontracting with Alaska Sea Grant to attempt to operate the farm this year. And he went out and did his first round of seed stock collection that got sent over to the Kodiak lab to be cultivated, which is really exciting. So hopefully we're just kind of sorting out some of the insurance stuff right now, but once that's figured out, hopefully this will be the first year we get to grow at the Zachary Bay farm, which is kind of fun, so I'll kind of keep you posted on that. For Board of Fisheries, we finalized and executed the contract with CoreData to start that fleet management portal. CoreData's already begun work on the portal, and I'm working pretty closely with the processors. I just met with Mark Fina yesterday with Silver Bay to figure out some of the legal stuff and access to e-landings. And I'm also kind of just working with the Saners and some of the fleet guys to figure out maybe a fleet management agreement. I've gotten some feedback from other groups who've done similar things, so we're working on that. And I got a draft over to them last week. Of course, Ernie mentioned we had a fishermen's meeting in Seattle, which I thought went really well. I gave a brief update on our borough projects. AFSC cod tagging. So I met with AFSC scientist and my co-PI, Suzanne, in Seattle, and we discussed a tentative fieldwork plan, although we have not heard back from PAC states about funding that we were supposed to know about last August. So if we don't hear back in the next maybe month or two, I think we can't really count on that money for fieldwork, which usually happens in March. So that would just set us back a little bit. We might be able to do a small tagging project, but not nearly what we had planned for next year. So it just gets pushed back a year, which is always a bummer when you're trying to build a time series. But anyway, So also in conjunction with the tagging and genetic work that's going on with PCOD, I'm also kind of working on a very small study to look at the interannual variation in migration, movement of Pacific cod using their otoliths. We actually received a set of 34 otoliths complete with archival tagging data from NIMS, from a NIMS employee who was not using them, and it's kind of a gold mine of data, so that's really exciting. Fish taken around Unimak Pass and Kodiak, so that would be kind of cool. The last thing is just some highlights from plant ground fish plan team and then kind of rolling over into council that Ernie and I have been at this week. So the bright, shiny spot is pollock. Goa pollock has gone up. 2023 AVC had a 12% increase to 148,000 tons. 2024 will increase to 168,000 tons. We've had some pretty large incoming year classes, 2017, 18, and 20, so that's good news. EBS pollock also has gone up quite a bit. 2023 ABC will increase 31% to 1.6 million tons. 2024 will increase to 1.8 million. Really strong 2018 year class, so that's kind of a nice break. All right, for the bad news, PCOD is pretty bad. In the Goa, it's going to decrease 24% to 24,000 tons, and then will decrease again in 2024. Also, Bering Sea PCOD has a decrease of 5% and will decrease again in 2024. Winners of climate change are going to be sable fish. That seems to be the story, is black cod is going to increase to 40,000 tons in 2023, however, which is not much from last year, but if you look at the quota since 2016, it has quadrupled. So they love climate change. Also, POP is doing pretty good. For ecosystem status, just generally, the Gulf of Alaska is kind of transitioning from this marine heat wave that you've been hearing a lot about the past, you know, 5 years, 6 years. And the last 2 to 3 years, we've kind of been in a La Nina state. So in the Bering Sea, the cold pool that you guys might hear about is coming back, which is a really big deal because, you know, we know like pollock and cod like the cold pool. So anyways, that looks like it's gone back to average. Also, the sea ice extent in the Bering Sea has gone back to the 10-year average. So we're kind of seeing a little bit of a rebound in the Bering Sea, which is good news. Anyways, that's it. If anybody wants to know anything about, you know, specs that I didn't list, I'm happy to get them to you and happy to take questions.
I have a question on the black cod. Did the biomass really go up that much? Or is some of this looking at the catches now that guys are using the slinky pot? Because the catches have gone up dramatically with the use of pot.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I'm not sure. I could probably find out.
Well, I think it has gone up because of bycatch of through the roof.
Yeah. But I'm not totally sure about what the change has been because of slinky pots directly.
Yeah. I know that this year there's some guys that were longlining have switched over, and they were just amazed that, like, one of the boats had something like 70,000 pounds of black cod in a trip where he said if he was using longline gear, if the whales didn't eat them all, he might have got 7,000.
Yeah. What's your difference?
Anyway, any questions for Charlotte? Okay. Beverly.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Officer and Assembly. The report is in my is in the packet. So on October 4, 2022, the Aleutian Seas Borough held its regular election for Assembly Seat B, Seat E, and Seat G, as well as the School Board Seat B, Seat D, Seat E, and Seat G. The Canvas Committee met on November 14, 2022, and counted all the eligible ballots with the following results. For Assembly Seats, Assembly Seat B, 3-year term, Paul Granholt. Assembly Seat E, 3-year term, no one received in excess of 40, so a runoff is necessary, as well as for the Seat G, 3-year term. For School Board Seats, Seat B, 3-year term, Brenda Lee Wilson. Seat D, 1-year term, Jade Gunderson, CPE, 3-year term, Rita Uyudek, sorry. CG, 3-year term, Carlene Hoblet. So below is the schedule that I followed for the election, and I highlighted some of the dates. September 5, 2022, that's when I prepared the mail-only ballots for the communities of Coldway, Falls Pass, and Nelson Lagoon. Half of the by-mail ballots were dropped off at the post office on Thursday, September 8, 2022, and the other half was mailed out Friday, the next day, September 9, 2022. On September 9, all the voting materials were sent to all the assistant clerks in each Aleutians East Borough community. September 19 to October 3, 2022 is the schedule for the early voting, and it was established only in Acutan, and absentee in-person schedule is the same date for all the borough communities. October 4 is the election day. October 14, the canvas committee met to count all the absentee ballots and eligible by mail ballots from three smaller communities. Since it was a very close count for Assembly Seat E and Seat G, all the ballots were counted twice from all the borough communities. So per our code, the Canvas Committee will meet first Monday after the election. This year, that date fell on October 10. 2022, but since we have not received the materials by that date, I decided to postpone it day by day until we receive the materials. So by postponing it day by day, it also gave us time to receive more by-mail ballots only from smaller communities. We received the ballot from both King Cove and Acutan and some of the smaller communities on Thursday, October 13, 2022. So a public notice was posted around town and sent to each assistant clerks and was also posted on our Facebook account and our website. So just on my report, I attached the code where it says when we should meet for Canvas Committee as well as when the certification has to be made. So on October 17, a special meeting was held at 10 o'clock to certify the election results. On October 17, 9 by mail only ballots from Falls Pass were received at around 3:30 p.m., and only one was postmarked with a date. So I just want to repeat that it is a requirement on our code that all the ballots must be postmarked to be able at the election date. So that's October 4. Needs to be postmarked October 4 for it to be able to count. And eight of the mail ballots that we received doesn't have any dates at all. So the next page is the report for the special election on November 8th, Aleutians East Borough held a special election for the purpose of resolving the runoff for Assembly Seat E and Assembly Seat G. The following is the result. Seat E, 3-year term, Jim R. Smith, Sr. Seat G, 3-year term, Daley Jean Schack. So below is the schedule that I followed, and highlight dates are listed. October 17, as soon as I knew that there will be a runoff, I prepared all the voting materials for the special election to be sent to all the borough communities. October 18, all the voting materials were sent to all the assistant clerks in each borough communities. October 24 to November 7, that's the absentee in person, absentee by mail, fax, or email or fax is the schedule for all the borough communities. November 8 was the election day. November 16, the Canvas Committee met at 9 o'clock a.m. to count all the absentee ballots eligible ballots by mail, special ballots, and question ballots from three smaller communities. And on November 21st, a special meeting was held at 10 o'clock in the morning to certify the election results. So if you have any questions, please let me know.
Thank you. Questions? Paul?
Yeah, thank you, Beverly, for the report to help clarify quite a few things. And I'm sure everybody probably saw the article in the Anchorage paper yesterday where some ballots from different communities around the state have had problems. Some of them still haven't made it to juvenile from a couple of communities. However, the question I have is, you know, the ballots that didn't get postmarked in false pass. I don't know if Tommy's still online. However, it seems weird. I think that's a pretty big deal. We've got to notify. I don't know how they got in the mail system without getting postmarked. And I think we've got to notify the postal system that, you know, folks are, as you know, reading around the country, it's a big deal if ballots get mixed up a little bit. And this is a small amount, however, we should probably bring that out to the post office and find out. I assume in a special election, everything was postmarked that we got. Hell yeah, that's weird. Anyway, it's worthy of pointing out to them.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions or comments from Beverly?
Hi, this is Josie. I have one comment.
Go ahead, Josie.
I agree with Paul about the postmarking. I mean, we're having the same issue here. March 31st, the PFD deadline, my uncle's didn't get postmarked until it got to Anchorage, which was after the deadline. So I know there was surveys done earlier this year. I think Laura was doing them. Was there I don't know. I'm frustrated with Postal Service right now, and hope that could get resolved somehow. I don't know if we need to reach out to the Postal Service or what, but Actan still doesn't have a permanent postal worker, so yeah, thanks.
Yeah, Josie, the borough didn't actually go out and do the surveys. We put together a form and sent to the community, so if people were having trouble with timing of the mail or the length of time it took to get there. And there was a lot of concerns at the time over medicine moving into the communities from, prescription meds. So we did up the forms and we put them all out there, but there seemed to be an awful lot of concern when we did this and did the forms. And in reality, time went by a year later, maybe a half a dozen or so, people actually filled a form out and sent it in, so it seemed like there was a lot of concern, but nobody made an effort to fill out the form. So I don't know what you do with that, because you know it's like leading a horse to water kind of thing. So we gave it a shot, but it didn't pan out very good on that.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, other questions? So we're down to assembly comment. So, Paul?
Yeah, I'll just start to that election thing I wanted to mention, too. You know, our canvas committee, they're waiting for the ballots. I know there's been an internal discussion about how we could change it for the better and get fast results. And I think we should hopefully keep working on that and bring some ordinance change to the assembly. We don't wait too long. You know, kind of, we have to get ready sometime this spring. It'd be nice. But I have three quick comments.
Wait now before you go on. So are you going to bring something to the assembly?
No, I think we should as a group somehow, either our attorney or somebody that's a specialist in state election law, somehow have some options. Because we're a lot of unique communities in the state, but the way we're spread out and how mail is not going to get any better.
So. Yeah, and we've had discussions about, you know, maybe we should be sending the ballots out on air cargo or especially like Acatan, sometimes they don't know when their post office is going to be open because they don't have a postmaster. So that's one of the things we could look at, and I've talked to Beverly about it also, is like, you know, maybe we have to move the ballots on a charter plane or a freight plane.
Maybe a Zoom canvas committee meeting. Maybe that's legal.
But I think as assembly members, if people think about this and come up with different ideas, just email your ideas to the clerk. Yeah. We can file them. How's that?
And then just quick comments on swamps. We have a winter retreat here, Saturday meeting, but Tustin made a replacement, which we passed resolution. Anyway, they're finally, DOT is making a little bit of progress. So that was some good news that I heard that maybe other people have heard too at the AML meeting. And Swampsy's still looking for an executive director, not having a lot of luck, like a lot of jobs, hard to find people. Shirley's retiring, doing a great job, but she's looking to retire. But anyway, if you know people qualified, submit an application. And then working with Southeast Conference on this mariculture grant that the group's got, there's still those, I think I mentioned last meeting, there's going to be, two positions, four-year positions, probably based in Anchorage for somebody energetic and new to the workplace that has a lot of enthusiasm for, you know, I think there's two positions open. And I think they're going to be trying to fill them sooner than later. But I'll know more after Saturday on the latest.
Well, we already have the kelp queen, so they're going to have to be under her.
Yeah, well, they got the money, though. That's the other thing. A lot of money. That's it. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Other assembly members?
Mayor?
Yes.
Alvin, this is Daly. Sorry, I was a little late today. Everybody's sick, and so I was the only one working the plane today. So I tried to get here as soon as I could. Just a quick thing on the elections. Did you guys talk about having polling places back in the smaller towns again? Is that an option?
I don't know. It's something we could look at. And I'm not sure if you have a polling place, if you have to have a clerk. I don't know. These are things we could look at.
Okay.
Others? Okay. So, if there's no other assembly comments, any public comments? Hearing none. So the next meeting date will be January 12th, 2023. And I believe that's here in Anchorage during our planning session. Motion to adjourn. Second? I don't know if we need a second.
Second.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.